This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Joy Powers. A final electoral map analysis released by NPR has Vice President Joe Biden going into Election Day with an edge over President Donald Trump. But President Trump still has a narrow and not impossible path to re-election. In 2016, Hillary Clinton led in many polls over then-candidate Donald Trump. But in a number of key battleground states, the polls got it wrong. This week, there are even more factors that'll play into voter turnout, including third-party influences and, of course, the pandemic. While some may be looking to the 2016 election for signs of what's to come, pollsters and analysts are being overly cautious when it comes to making predictions. To learn more about the differences between the 2016 and 2020 elections, Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski spoke with NPR's senior political editor and correspondent, Domenico Montanaro.
Domenico Montanaro, welcome to Lake Effect. Thanks for taking the time to speak with me today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So in an article you wrote for NPR, you state that, quote, Democrats are haunted by the ghosts of 2016. And even while that may be the case, do you think it's even right of us to draw comparisons between 2016 to this election cycle?
Well, everyone always draws, the lessons from the last election and sometimes are being more reactive than proactive, because certainly people were looking at the 2012 election for comparisons to 2016. And we saw how that new ground sort of got shaped. And I think that there's the potential always for new ground to be shaped for this election. I mean, so far, we're seeing some new trends that are developing, you know, from what people are telling surveyors and pollsters. They're saying, you know, you have a much higher share of white voters, for example, white voters with college degrees in particular, and suburban voters and seniors who are saying that they're in favor of Joe Biden across lots of key states and nationally, which would be certainly a new coalition for Democrats if they're able to win over a higher percentage of whites than they have in the past. And at the same time, you're seeing African-Americans and Latinos lagging what their share was for Hillary Clinton in 2016. You know, Biden's support with white voters right now is making up for it nationally. We'll see if that trend continues, but that would be a whole new thing too, just like it was a whole new thing to see so many whites without a college degree go in such a big margin for President Trump in 2016.
Right. So on the note of margins, one thing that is a constant in election, right, is polls. So back in 2016, Clinton led in many of them over Trump, but battleground polls got it wrong. Do you see similar patterns in this cycle? And has polling changed slightly, either due to the pandemic or because of lessons learned from 2016?
Yeah, I think that, it's really important to take polls with a grain of salt. I think that anytime you're looking at the polls with very large specificity, I think it can be problematic. I mean, there are margins of error that you have to keep in mind. The trend lines are what's most important in these polls. What the middle is, for what it is statistically, is sort of the most important thing. Now, a lot of the pollsters from 2016 to 2020 have made some big adjustments, in particular when it comes to education. They really underappreciated how many, you know, voters for President Trump there would be, especially in the upper Midwest. And also, you know, the big problem with state polling is that you've had such a decline in local media, and there hadn't been as much good polling as there should be. And I think a lot of the pollsters took for granted that some of these states like Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania had gone for Democrats for so many cycles that they sort of shirked going in with a lot of to do a lot of surveys. This time around, we've seen more surveys. We've seen better polls. We've seen people, national organizations sort of pay for more, state polls. But look, polls are what they are. You know, they're snapshots. They're not necessarily predictive. And what we saw in 2016 was a big closing of the gap, even in those states that showed Hillary Clinton with a big lead going into Election Day. There, the trend line had been a closing of the gap, or some polls showing the race very tight. So that's an important thing to pay attention to. But the most important thing, especially this year with coronavirus being such a variable in all of this, is the vote and people just getting out to vote. And this last week is always going to be anxiety producing. We're just not going to know until the votes are counted.
Right. And when it comes to voter motivation, especially, how do Biden and Trump camps compare? And do you think there's overall a larger motivation for all voters to get out the vote this year?
Well, all signs are pointing to record turnout this year. So I do think that overall, it's not just Democrats, it's also Republicans. There's been a ton of, you know, energy, a ton of pushback on, you know, because President Trump is up for re-election. He's been such a hotly polarizing figure. He has very strongly disapproval, you know, very high, strongly disapproval ratings. He has a deep well of support from Republicans. And that creates an environment where the intensity is just so much that we're going to likely see very high turnout. We've seen that in the early vote totals already so far. And what turnout experts predict is a turnout rate that's probably going to be the highest since 1908. They're looking at a turnout rate of about 65% or higher, and about 155 million to 160 million people who cast their votes in total.
And how are young voters playing into this, either if they're voting for the first time or perhaps this is only their second presidential election?
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of young voters go out to the polls this time. A lot of new voters, as far as, you know, data goes with the early vote that we're seeing turned up in a lot of these states that at least, you know, look at some of that age demographic information. So, you know, I do think that there's going to be a lot of new people who are into the system. There might be a lot of people who watched the election in 2016 and didn't necessarily go out to vote who were of age who are going to come out to vote. So I just think overall, we're going to see a huge surge in turnout overall.
Right. And I feel like a lot of people are more aware, whether it's growing social media campaigns or even being more aware of voter suppression, you know. So do you feel this greater recognition of how things are working, whether people are questioning the validity of some things, but just overall the movement to push people to vote no matter what?
Well, yeah, and I think especially on the left, there were a lot of people, or some people anyway, who didn't think Donald Trump was going to win. You know, either they got lured into a false sense of security because of the polls, or they didn't like Hillary Clinton and didn't think she was, I don't know, ideologically pure enough, or didn't like the Clinton baggage, or didn't like having dynasties, whatever it was. Some of them registered protest votes to a third party in some key places that I, you know, we're seeing indications in polling anyway, that they're less likely to do that this time around. You know, I think some of the other big differences that we should really understand is that in 2016, the polling was a lot more volatile. With news events, you saw contractions and expansions. Yes, Hillary Clinton had a large lead, but then all of a sudden you would see them dissipate and all of a sudden be very, very tight. And then all of a sudden, you know, kind of go back out again. And that's just not the case this time. We've seen Joe Biden with a pretty consistent lead since April. He hasn't been below 49% in the polls. He's been at 50% or above. And why that's important is because that means not only does President Trump have to win over those undecided late breaking voters that he did in 2016, but he also has to win over some people who have said, all right, I'm not just undecided, I'm voting for Joe Biden.
You mentioned the third party component, which I think is very different this year. You know, back in 2016, there was a significant split. And for this election cycle, progressives and political figures like Bernie Sanders are working with Biden and his campaign. Do you feel that both parties, Republican and Democrats, are more unified this time around and there's less of a degree of undecided voters or the third party people?
Overall, there are far fewer undecided voters this time than there were last time. I mean, in our polling, the latest NPR PBS NewsHour Marist polling, there were only 5% of people who said that they were either persuadable or were undecided. So, you know, you're talking about a very small number of people who don't have an opinion on this president. That's essentially what it comes down to. You either love him or you hate him. And that's really what's driving a lot of the turnout here.
Right. And on the note of, you know, you love the president or you hate him, you know, Trump now this year versus being an outsider in the 2016 election, now he's an incumbent with a record to defend, right? But have you seen really a clear second term message versus reelect me?
I think that you hit the nail on the head as far as the fact that this president is, you know, somebody who people love or hate, and that he's been president this time around and he has a record to defend is really key. Because, you know, it's one thing to say that you're an outsider throwing stones at the glass house. You know, it's another thing to say that you are in the house and you're trying to run it and, you know, the water's not working or the things aren't going so well for a lot of people in the country, especially as it relates to coronavirus. And I think that when you have a lot of people looking at the president for a clear second term agenda and plan on coronavirus, he's kind of punted a little bit on that to say, look, you know, the media is focusing way too much on it. Even as there are surges and spikes in different parts of the country, he has, you know, a very high disapproval rating from people when it comes to handling coronavirus. And what he's mostly done is to talk about the accomplishments that he's had, things that he promises that he's made, especially to his base, and that he would continue some of that in a second term. Of course, a lot of these things are sort of wait for me to show you, like, for example, healthcare. You know, if the Supreme Court were to repeal the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, where is that healthcare plan? You know, there isn't one at this point. The Republicans in Congress have tried to repeal it multiple times. They have not been able to pass a new plan. And, you know, that is a difficulty for him when it comes to vaccines. You know, he keeps promising it's going to come soon, but what is the timeline on that exactly? And, you know, a lot of people feel like they're not getting a straight answer on when any of that's going to come. But, you know, President Trump's base is certainly convinced that he's doing the right things and looking out for them.
Do you think the vilification strategy Trump often uses is going to be effective this time around? You know, it doesn't seem to be hitting the same tone as his initial campaign was.
None of that seems to be sticking as much to Joe Biden. He has a different kind of record. He has a different kind of view from people. You know, people can talk about what that means as far as it relates to sexism or whatever else. But, you know, clearly Joe Biden, especially in the Midwest, is better liked than Hillary Clinton was. You see his approval ratings, or his favorability ratings rather, have actually gone up during the campaign, which is surprising because most of the time they become much more polarized and contracted. And you know, that's just different this time around. And you know, a big number to watch on election night is the fact that in 2016, Donald Trump won over a big share of people who said that they didn't like either Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. This time around, you just don't have that same slice of voters.
Right. And one key thing that, of course, we think of in Wisconsin here when it comes to Hillary Clinton's campaign is that she lost the state by, you know, just about 23,000 votes. So how are Democrats paying more attention to the swing states they once neglected?
Well, the big criticism of her was that she didn't go to Wisconsin, that they kind of took it for granted, that it closed late. And this time around, you have seen Democrats make a much stronger push there. You know, Biden has had a much lighter campaign schedule overall, but he has visited Wisconsin and he's spent a ton of money on the airwaves. I'm sure you've seen ads for Biden far more than you have for President Trump. So I think that that was a huge lesson. Their idea this time around is to rebuild that blue wall, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and they feel like Democrats that they can win the White House, as well as focusing on new states, Sunbelt sort of states like Arizona, Georgia, and Florida, and North Carolina, for example. And not to mention, who knows what happens with Texas? The early vote is already up over 80% there. Who knows how that winds up playing out?
Yeah, and with obviously the coronavirus pandemic is at top of mind for people, does the economy make a significant factor in this year compared to 2016?
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, you know, look, President Trump still has his best ratings when it comes to the economy. He's trying to focus on that to say that he'll bring back the economy that was before coronavirus. It's sort of a tough message to make when Joe Biden is saying, well, you know, if you want to open up, you've got to do things like wear masks, socially distance, and that will stop the spread and then be able to reopen businesses. And he's blaming President Trump for an economy that's declined. And as the months wear on, that's certainly taken a toll on President Trump. Now, who knows how it's going to wind up playing out if President Trump's base winds up coming out in stronger force. You know, certainly a place like Wisconsin is like 57% whites without college degrees. It's a huge number. And a reason why the Biden campaign has continued to say that they think that the race there is much tighter than public polls have shown.
So all things considered, and as we are coming in on days left until the official election, do you think it's best for now just to keep modesty in predictions?
Predictions are always a terrible idea. I think it's probably best for people to do the things that keep them healthy and sane, like, you know, go for walks, exercise, eat right, and get some sleep, because there's nothing you can do between now and then unless you voted or tried to get others to vote.
Right. Well, what do you plan on doing between now and then as a political reporter?
Well, you know, I'm getting all my stuff ready. I mean, I'm going to sit there and like be looking through data for, you know, the counties to watch and bellwethers, and preparing our team here for what are the best sort of indicators, and looking at those early states, those early returns, to see if there are any clues that can tell us, you know, where this thing might be going.
Right. Well, you'll be looking, we'll all be watching, and also listening to everyone there at NPR. So keep up the great work. And Domenico Montanaro, thanks for joining me today to talk a little bit about the race.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Domenico Montanaro is the senior political editor and correspondent at NPR. He spoke with Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski.